Welcome. This is Cheryl at the Talking Information Center. Thanks so much for joining me. Today is Thursday, February 19th, 2026. I'm reading from the Providence Journal. The first article is entitled, Another Sad Day. All five victims and the suspect, who was also dead, in the shooting at the Dennis M. Lynch Arena ice rink in Pawtucket, have been identified, and police are continuing their investigation into a possible motive. Pawtucket police confirmed in a February 17th press conference that Rhonda Dorgan, 52, and Aiden Dorgan, 23, were killed in the shooting by Robert Dorgan, 56, who also goes by Roberta Dorgan and Roberta Esposito. Rhonda Dorgan is the shooter's ex-wife, and Aiden Dorgan is their son. The Providence Journal is using they, them pronouns to refer to the shooter, whose gender identity is unclear at this time. Critically injured in the shooting were Rhonda Dorgan's parents, Gerald and Linda Dorgan, as well as family friend Thomas Garuso. The families all shared the last name Dorgan because Rhonda Dorgan and the shooter were first cousins once removed. Pawtucket Police Chief Tina Gonsalves said during the press conference that the victims in the hospital were all fighting for their lives. Rhonda Dorgan of North Providence was mother of three. She was married to the shooter from 1992 until 2020 when she filed for divorce. She worked at the Eleanor Slater Hospital, the state's psychiatric hospital. Karen Greckel, a spokesperson for the State Department of Administration, said she had worked there since 2012. A statement from the Dorgan family attorney, Lawrence J. Signori, said that the family is cooperating with authorities and that they are deeply and profoundly affected by the shooting. We are reminded that behind every headline is a family experiencing profound pain and loss, the statement reads. We care greatly for all families impacted by this recent tragedy, and our thoughts are with them. While there are many questions being asked, please know we are focused on all of those who have been injured and whose lives have been forever changed, the statement continued. McKee talks about ripple effect. Governor Dan McKee offered Pawtucket and other affected communities the full support of the state and lamented during the press conference that this was the second mass shooting in Rhode Island in less than 3 months. It's another sad day in Rhode Island, he said. McKee spoke to the ripple effect this kind of violence has on the whole community, not just affecting the family involved, but also everyone who was in the arena, their families, and the schools when students returned from break. He pointed to several mental health services, including the United Way's 211 service, for those who were struggling, and said the state would be working with the schools to make help available. Too many Rhode Islanders know what it feels like to lose a loved one or a neighbor, a friend, to gun violence. Too many have experienced the tragedy of domestic violence, he said further. We've made efforts in that area. We're going to double down in that area. Police give new insights. Police confirmed during the press conference that at least three bystanders intervened, trying to stop the shooting. At that point, the shooter reached for a second firearm and died by suicide. In addition to confirming that the firearms were purchased legally, Gonsalves gave additional insight into the series of events leading up to the shooting, while also emphasizing that law enforcement was continuing to investigate. Gonsalves confirmed the shooter was in the stands watching the game. She reiterated several times it was not unusual for them to be present at a game and had been at several games in the past without incident. Gonsalves said, at some point, the shooter left the arena and then returned. She said law enforcement was still determining whether the shooter was armed the entire time they were in the arena or if they left to retrieve the firearms. At the press conference, Gonsalves said there had been no indication that there was a conversation or a confrontation at the rink between the shooter and the rest of the Dorgan family. But she added that authorities have not been able to interview all the victims because they are in critical condition at the hospital. Gonsalves also indicated that Rhonda Dorgan died at the arena, while Aiden Dorgan died at the hospital. Shooting leaves the hockey community reeling. Amy Goulet, a North Smithfield hockey mom, was among Rhode Islanders who gathered for a vigil on the night of Tuesday, February 17th, in the aftermath of shooting violence on February 16th at the Pawtucket Ice Rink. Goulet's son accompanied her to the Slatersville Congregational Church in North Smithfield, where the two of them encountered a group of reporters on their way into the vigil. The church had invited anyone thinking about the shooting to visit on Tuesday, February 17th, for the 6 p.m. vigil. "Now is the time for loving community," said the invitation. Goulet and her son wore their hockey jerseys. The boy plays for the NRI Vikings. Players for the Smithfield-based youth hockey team, who live in North Smithfield, can matriculate to Blackstone Valley Co-op, which was one of two teams playing at the Dennis M. Lynch Arena on February 16th when the shooting took place. The co-op team includes players from St. Raphael Academy, Providence County Day School, North Providence, and North Smithfield. "We're just supporting everybody in the community," said Goulet. North Smithfield hockey mom just wants you to know I love you all, and that's really it. Goulet acknowledged she had had some thoughts about the proximity of Monday's violence to her son's hockey community. "It's absolutely mind-boggling that this could happen to people we know and love and support through everything," she announced. Providence Zoo announces death of critically endangered tree kangaroo. Roger Williams Park Zoo has announced the death of Machiki's tree kangaroo, a member of a critically endangered species. The male kangaroo named Morobi recently turned 19, an impressive milestone for the species, as their average life expectancy is approximately 15 to 20 years in human care, the zoo said in a Facebook post. In 2021, Morobi was paired with Keewing, a female tree kangaroo, for breeding and sired two daughters, Paya and Wren, according to the zoo. In trying to help the threatened species survive, the zoo is part of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums Tree Kangaroo Species Survival Plan breeding program, the zoo announced. It also supports habitat conservation programs in Papua New Guinea, where the kangaroos make their homes in the mountainous rainforest. Morobi was an incredible ambassador to his species and had an impact on all who knew him, the zoo said. Tree kangaroos spend nearly all their lives in trees, according to the zoo. They have powerful limbs, long gripping claws, and a long tail for balance, enabling them to easily maneuver from branch to branch, the zoo announced. They can jump 30 to 45 feet between trees. The mammals weigh up to 22 pounds and have deep red and cream coloring and thick fur that insulates them against damp weather. Morobi was suffering from multiple age-related health conditions, and after a sudden decline in his health, it was determined his condition could not be managed in a way that would maintain a good quality of life. And ultimately, the decision was made to humanely euthanize him. On Facebook, the zoo quoted Morobi's keeper, Mac, saying, "He had a wonderful, laid-back personality and was always gentle with his keepers and fellow tree ruse. He also had the discerning that he is picky taste of a gentleman, being the rare individual who would show preference between American and European beech leaves or between red and white mulberry branches. He was also known for eating only the center of any flower that he was offered. We are thankful for the time we shared and for everyone who showed him love. The zoo said Morobe will be dearly missed by all. Today in history. Today is Thursday, February 19th, the 50th day of 2026. There are 315 days left in the year. On this date, in 1473, Nicolaus Copernicus was born in Poland. The mathematician and the astronomer developed a model of the solar system that placed the sun at its center, with Earth and other planets orbiting it. It was devotion to this Copernican model, a deviation from the Catholic Church's position that the Earth was at the center, that led to Galileo's conviction for heresy in 1633. 1807, former Vice President Aaron Burr was arrested and charged with treason. Eventually, he was acquitted after a court found he had conspired against the United States, but not committed an overt act of treason, which was a requirement for conviction. 1847. Rescuers reached the stranded Donner Party in the Sierra Nevada Mountains. Only 45 of the original 89 members who set out to California survived to reach their destination after the expedition became snowbound. 1878. Thomas Edison received a patent for the first device to both record and replay sound, the phonograph. French scientist Charles Cros had written a paper in April 1877 in which he theorized such a device, but Cros did not create a working model. Edison had built his phonograph in 1877, recorded the nursery rhyme, "Mary Had a Little Lamb," and in December 1877 demonstrated the device at the New York offices of the publication Scientific American. 1942, President Franklin Roosevelt signed an executive order forcing Japanese Americans into internment camps. The controversial decision came just 2 months after Japan bombed Pearl Harbor, pulling the United States into World War II. 1945, the U.S. Marines invaded Iwo Jima, which was considered an ideal staging area from which to attack Japan. 4 days later, the Americans claimed the highest point on the island, Mount Suribachi, and the photograph of the flag being raised by six Marines has remained an iconic image. 1963, publication of the Feminine Mystique by Betty Friedan dispelled a myth of domestic bliss, telling of ways in which women in America were still oppressed and relegated to second-class status. 1992, for his film Boys in the Hood, John Singleton became the first black director to be nominated for an Academy Award. His screenplay for the film also was nominated for an Oscar. In national news, avalanche in California mountain range kills eight. Eight of the nine missing skiers who were caught in an avalanche in California's Sierra Nevada mountain range have been found dead, officials announced, making it the deadliest U.S. avalanche in over four decades. The skiers went missing on February 17th after the avalanche swept through the Castle Peak area, northwest of Lake Tahoe, at about 11:30 a.m., according to the Nevada County Sheriff's Office. They were part of a group of 15 returning from a three-day trek in a rugged but popular recreational area. Six members of the group survived and were rescued after crews battled harsh weather conditions for hours to get to them. Two were taken to the hospitals with non-life-threatening injuries, the sheriff's office said. The survivors ranged in age from 30 to 55. The avalanche came as a powerful winter storm battered the region with heavy snow and high winds, the strongest winter storm of the year for the Lake Tahoe area. Interstate 80 was closed over the Donner Pass, and the area received up to 30 inches of snow, according to the Reno Gazette Journal, part of the USA Today network. We are actively coordinating additional resources statewide to support avalanche search and rescue efforts to locate missing skiers near Castle Peak, the California Office of Emergency Services announced. Officials said the bodies of the 8 skiers have not been removed because of heavy snow, high winds, and a persistent threat of further avalanches. The longer we continue to have people out there and exposed, the higher the chance we put our rescuers in danger, said Captain Rusty Green of the Nevada County's Sheriff's Department. Truckee-based company Blackbird Mountain Guides said the group of skiers included 4 guides and clients who were on a 3-day trip staying at Frog Lake Huts near Castle Peak. The group was in the process of returning to the trailhead at the conclusion of a 3-day trip when the incident occurred, Blackbird Mountain Guides announced. The Frog Lake Huts are remote structures in an area known for being prone to avalanches and challenging to get to in winter because of the rough conditions. To reach them, visitors must ski, snowboard, or snowshoe for miles. All routes to the Frog Lake Huts during the winter have some degree of avalanche hazard, according to the Truckee-Donner Land Trust. The Truckee-Donner Land Trust advises all visitors to the Frog Lake Huts to carry a beacon, probe, and shovel in the winter in case of avalanche. The risk of avalanches remained high on February 18th, and an avalanche warning was in place in the Lake Tahoe area through at least February 19th, according to the U.S. Forest Service Sierra Avalanche Center. Rapidly accumulating snowfall, weak layers in the existing snowpack, and gale force winds that blow and drift snow have created dangerous avalanche conditions in the mountains, the center said on February 18th. Also in national news, modern tech helps hinders the Guthrie case. Tools assist authorities but can, indeed, hide the suspects. Tucson, Arizona. The search for Nancy Guthrie is unfolding in the desert foothills north of Tucson and across digital networks where investigators are working to piece together physical evidence and electronic traces left behind by her possible abductors. Authorities say a masked armed individual was captured on video tampering with Guthrie's Google Nest doorbell camera. The FBI is handling ransom-related communications tied to the case. After officials released surveillance images, thousands of tips poured in within days. Deputies have executed search warrants, towed a gray Range Rover from a nearby parking lot, and confirmed they are analyzing unidentified DNA recovered at Guthrie's home. No arrests have been announced. Experts say the case reflects how modern crime and modern investigations now unfold simultaneously in the physical world and online. It's a game of cat and mouse, said Milos Manick, the director of Virginia Commonwealth University's Cybersecurity Center, in an interview with the Arizona Republic. Manick said today's crimes often intersect with network devices, cloud storage systems, and digital payment platforms. The same technology that allows homeowners to monitor cameras remotely or move money instantly can also be used to obscure activity or disrupt surveillance. Technology is changing, And as any technology can be used for noble purposes, it can also be used in nefarious ways, said Manick, hiding digital footprints. It was not immediately clear how the ransom notes tied to the case were sent. Tucson television station KOLD reported the two ransom notes it received were not sent from the same IP address, a unique identifier associated with an internet connection. Manick said suspects could be replying on different privacy tools, including proxy chains, VPNs, the dark web, Tor networks, connection through burner devices, or local public Wi-Fi networks. Those tools can route the internet traffic through multiple servers or locations, sometimes even across countries. It may appear that it's coming from a certain city or a certain state or a country, while it's really bounced off all around the world, said Manick. Even so, experts said technology does not guarantee invisibility. Investigators also assess behavior and patterns. Lance Lessing, a former supervisory special agent with 23 years at the FBI's Phoenix Field Office, said he did not believe that the suspect was a professional criminal. He added, suspects frequently misjudge their own sophistication. A lot of times, criminals think they're smarter than they are, said Lessing. Even when people think they've covered their tracks, there's usually something left behind. Cameras and cloud data. The video of the masked individual tampering with Guthrie's doorbell camera shows the role Wi-Fi-capable homeowner devices play in modern cases. These devices are networked together, said Manick. You connect the timeline of events. Manick said investigators can reconstruct digital timelines by correlating camera footage, device logs, and other metadata. But access to that data depends on storage policies, subscription services, and technical constraints. Homes and businesses increasingly use internet-connected cameras and smart systems, many of which store footage in the cloud. Video from one camera can be matched with footage from a nearby properties or traffic systems, helping investigators reconstruct movements with precision. However, what's theoretically possible in practice is not always possible, said Manick. Lessing added, reviewing surveillance footage can be labor-intensive when large volumes must be analyzed. It's manpower-intensive, he said. Sitting watching 10 hours of video, that's one person's day. Authorities have used a device known as a signal sniffer, mounted on a law enforcement helicopter in an attempt to detect Nancy Guthrie's pacemaker signal, according to reports from Fox News and News Nation, who reported the device was attached to a Pima County Sheriff's Department helicopter that was seen flying low over the Tucson area on February 3rd. Kevin Smith's spokesperson for the FBI's Phoenix Field Office declined to comment on whether investigators were using such a device. Digital currency complicates investigations. Digital currency in physical crime has become more visible also. A Bitcoin address was listed in a ransom note connected to the Guthrie case. Cryptocurrency is often perceived as anonymous, but experts say its structure is more complicated. A blockchain in an open-source database, essentially a public ledger, that forms a permanent record of transactions, said Nathan Peterson of the Schwab Center for Financial Research. Once recorded, a transaction can't be altered or counterfeited. Every transfer is visible on the network, creating a permanent record of how funds move between wallets. But identifying the person behind a wallet is far more difficult. Finding the individual behind a Bitcoin address is nearly impossible, said Ken Gray, a former FBI agent and professor at the University of New Haven, in an interview with USA Today. Lessing said that when digital payments are involved, investigators often look beyond the transaction itself. They analyze communication, device data, surveillance, and other evidence that can connect online activity to a specific person. From the Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack to dark web marketplaces, such as Silk Road, criminals have used cryptocurrency and anonymity networks to obscure their identities. In many cases, investigators later trace transactions and digital infrastructure. Guns used in fatal hockey rink shooting were acquired legally. The firearms used in the deadly Pawtucket hockey rink shooting on February 16th were a 10mm Glock and a Sig Sauer 226, which were acquired legally, according to Pawtucket Police Chief Tina Gonsalves. The shooter had a license to carry a firearm from Florida, but Gonsalves said they were investigating whether the shooter had a license to carry in any other states. Gonsalves said that there were three bystanders who stepped in to interfere in the shooting. At that point, the shooter reached for a second firearm and shot himself. A number of first responders, including several firefighters and several nurses, happened to be on a scene attending the hockey game and rendered aid to the victims. Police got to the scene within 60 to 90 seconds of the call. Gonsalves said Ripta helped to transport victims after the shooting. Rhonda Dorgan died at the arena. Aiden Dorgan succumbed to his injuries after being transported to the hospital. Mayor Don Grieben described the shooting as a stark reminder of the devastating consequences of domestic violence and gun violence. Well, that ends our segment for today. Thanks again for joining me, and I wish you a wonderful week ahead.